Okay, welcome everyone. This is the chicken session, and it's my pleasure to introduce Bryn Liske, and she lives on a small ranch just west of Laramie with her husband, with all kinds of critters, horses, cats, dogs, and 42 chickens. And over the years, they have built up their soil on the land, and they do raised beds and grow most of their own food. So today she's here to talk with us a little more about chickens. And I guess I'll just let you get started.
I think this is great to have a whole hour to talk to people about my chickens. And so I do have some handouts that Tina's taking around. One's a resource list, and it just kind of touches, you know, the top of the iceberg as far as that goes with resources. And it's got books, and there's a lot of great coop designs. I'm not going to go into those so much because Joel did so much with the, you know, his tractor trailers. In fact, I called my husband last night and said, guess what we're going to be making? But they're going to have to be a little different for Laramie. We're going to have them on some large wheels so we can go over the rocks and the sagebrush. And so we live out on a glacial moraine, and this is our soil in Laramie. And I also use it for chicken grit. The first time I raised chickens, I actually had to buy the grit for the chickens, and which, you know, because we didn't have gravel and stuff like that. So that's the chicken grit. And then this is my garden soil that I've made from the chicken manure, the chickens digging through the garden, and all that. So it's a great contrast. Okay, and how many of you have chickens? Oh, cool. Okay, I would like to have this question and answer towards the end, so I'm sure you have some things you can teach me as well. I've been raising them off and on for 20 years the second time. The first time was when I was in my early 20s in a trailer court, and we had an incubator, and we did 12 chickens that my son incubated, and they all were fertile, the eggs. It was kind of cool. So we started out with a small chicken coop there, and that's where we bought the grit for them. But let me go ahead with the talk, and we'll just get started, and I'll probably ask you questions now and then. When I get down to the butchering, is there going to be anybody that feels squeamish about that? Cool. Okay, we'll go ahead and talk about that just a little bit. Because I had to learn all these things. It doesn't come naturally if you haven't been raised on a farm or a ranch. And I was a city kid, and I had the opportunity to move out on the ranch 22 years ago. And so everything I've learned has been from books and local people and experience. So, and the reason I called it the chicken or the egg is you have three different ways you can go if you get chickens. You can start with you can order eggs by mail or get them from a local grower. And you can either make an incubator or buy one. The one that we made was out of a styrofoam container, styrofoam cooler, and we just bought an aquarium thermostat and put a little dish of water in the bottom of it to keep the humidity at about 55 degrees. And it worked great. We used a 40-watt bulb for heat. And we turned the eggs every three or four times a day. And then on the last 3 days, you stop turning the eggs. But it's really exciting as you do this. We did it for our son. It's a 4-H project. But it's so cool because you begin to feel the chickens moving inside the egg. And it's just wonderful to see that way that the life is starting. But the last 3 days, you leave the eggs alone. You up the humidity, and then the chicks make it out on their own. They manage. Some we had to wait almost 2 days for them to get completely through the egg, but you don't want to interfere at all because they do it in their own time. They know nature lets them take their course, and if you crack them out of the eggs earlier or anything like that or help them along, a lot of times you'll have a chicken that's just not as strong as the others, their legs are weak or their neck's weak. We made that goof the first time with our ducks, and we had this one little duck that was great, but he couldn't hold his head up. We called him Peep Peep, and his head would fall down, Peep Peep, and then his head would fall down, and took him about 3 months before he actually developed the muscles in his neck. And the same thing can happen with the chicks. So at least we learned that lesson before we did the chicken lesson. The other way you can get is you can order the chicks from a catalog or get them from your local feed store. When you get them from the catalog, they ship them through the mail. And it's really kind of cool because when the chicken hatches, they absorb the egg yolk into their bellies, and they can go for 3 days, three full days without food or water. And so it's kind of really interesting to know that they can come through the mail. But our post office is great. They'll call us on a Saturday or even a Sunday morning, and they'll come in and be there for us. If we need to go get those chicks, they're there. Another way you can do it is go to your local feed store, and they're really good too. They do the same thing, but if you want just like 10 chickens or 5 turkeys, something like that, you're better off getting them from your feed store because I think it's Murray and most of them, they have to ship at least 25 chicks. So that's a minimum order if you want to get them sent through the mail. If you get some ducks or turkeys, something like that, with the increased size, you can go down in the number. But that's kind of, we've started getting them from our feed store because we live 20 miles out of town. And sometimes it's just awkward to drive into town at the last minute and pick up our chicks and bring them home. The other thing you can do is buy 5-month-old hens, and you can start that way, or get older hens. But the first year is when you really get the egg production. And those hens, you can get them from local growers, and then some feed stores will carry young pullets like that, but ours doesn't. They don't mess with that. But they're happy to give names out to people about who does raise pullets. We get calls now and then from somebody that wants to get a couple of hens to start their backyard group. Let's see. When you get the chicks, you need to feed them and water them right away. And I don't know how many of you went to Joel's talk, but turkeys, you have to teach them where the food and the water is. Chickens are just about the same. They're not real great. So what I do is I introduce them to the water. These are the different waters that you can get. Just a couple of the samples. And I just dip their head in the water before they take off. And I also sprinkle feed on the newspaper that I put down for them in the brooder. And then these are the feeders. These are kind of cool. You can use quart jars too. They're great. This is a pint, but it was easier to travel with. And catalogs like Murray & McMurray, I got these catalogs, and I hope all of you pick one up. They're really great. I could have done my whole report from the Murray & McMurray catalog. There's just so much information in them. And that's why one of the sheets I gave you has the list on the back. It's got all the temperatures, how you want to set up your brooder. This is a 250-watt bulb in this. I hold it up, and you control the heat by how high you have it over the chicks. And it's really cool because chickens can kind of let you know if they're too hot or too cold. If you find out that all the chickens go around the outside of your brooder, then you can kind of figure you need to bring that up a little bit so they can cool down. Or if they cluster underneath the light, then you need to move it down a little bit so they can stay warmer. In the first few days, I don't put any shavings or anything like that down. I just use newspaper because you never know what they're going to eat, and it's better to just let them start out with feed. I actually put a little bit of feed on the newsprint so they can pick that up as well as get it out of the feeder. And then by the third day, they're pretty sure where the water is, where the feed is, and 3 days is our saying. That's the learning curve for a chicken anyway. It's pretty cool. And then I get the chick starter, and then I take a little bit of this grit, not a lot, but I put it over like I would a salt shaker, and they use that grit to digest their food, and they really need that within the first few days. And I continue to give that, but if you give them too much, they might just eat the grit, and then that's not too cool. And so this is what I use for grit, and then you guys can buy it from your local feed store, or I don't know where you're all from and what your soil's like. So, but when I lived in Oregon, my soil was like this, you know, so you had to get grit.
Anthills are great.
Pardon?
Anthills are great.
Anthills. Oh, very good. Thank you.
They've got perfect size.
Yeah, okay.
There's lots of them around. Mm-hmm.
You might get a few Indian beads, too, with the anthills. Okay. And then I use a commercial chick starter for the first 4 weeks of life. And then I switch to a grower. And they all look just about the same. The only difference, really, is protein and fat content. And I've written that on these sacks if you're interested, just to, when they're real young, they really need a lot of protein. So it's 8% protein, but only 3% fat. You don't want chickens to get too fat because then they aren't going to produce eggs as well. They get lazier. And, you know, if you want a meat chicken, that's different. You know, if you want the heavy-bodied meat chicken, then that's a little different with what we feed them and everything. But what I do is I get hens that are kind of dual purpose. They're a pretty good sized meat bird, and I butcher them after just a few years. So they're tough. They're like a stewing hen, but they're really flavorful. And our chickens are all free range. I didn't know about the poultry fences. I'm really excited about that, to think that that might be an option, because every now and then with our free range chickens, we have coyotes, foxes, eagles, and hawks. One winter we had, it was interesting, there were two coyotes and three eagles that were actually hunting together. And it was pretty exciting to watch, but then we had to keep our chickens pinned up in their coop for 2 weeks at that time because, I just don't have the heart to go out and shoot coyotes. We scare them away, and that usually does pretty well for a few days. And so I'm a little lacking in some of those things. I guess I was such a conservationist person before I moved out on the ranch, and I've changed my mind a lot about it, and I have killed, you know, skunks and badgers, and I have killed a coyote now and then, but I usually try warning them off first. It's just, I feel more comfortable like that. It's that our first year we moved out there, I actually went out and went antelope hunting. And now our property, our 40 acres, is an antelope haven. You know, we invite them in during hunting season, and that's just the way we are with our chickens. But we do butcher our chickens. That's what happens after our chickens get older. They stop laying, or like last year, I got a call from the post office, and somebody had gotten 100 chicks sent to them, but it was the wrong zip code. So the post office didn't know where they were supposed to go, what to do with them, but they knew that within a couple days they'd die. So I got 100 sex-linked chickens. And those are kind of a neat bird. They're Leghorn and Rock that are bred together, and they come out, they're color-coded, so you know whether they're male or females. And so we had 100 female chickens, which is way more than what I wanted that year, because I'd already had my 50 that I and run. But we raised them, and we decided to sell most of those hens for meat. They weren't real meaty. The sex links aren't as full-bodied as, say, the barred rocks that we normally raise. But it worked out real well. In Wyoming, you can't legally butcher a chicken and sell it. So what we did was we had butcher parties. And that was really, it was pretty terrific. We had probably 12 different people that wanted to come out and have chickens because it was really important to them to be part of the butchering process. And so I had 3 or 4 people that couldn't bring themselves to kill the chickens. But we all kept busy. We all kept plucking and things like that. And it worked out great. We had a fun time, a lot of good memories for people. We had some guests come from the East Coast that, you know, this was totally new to them. We had a couple people that were vegans, but they wanted to see what it was like, and so they came and helped. But there's three ways that I've heard of to butcher a chicken and read about. And when I was a little girl, I lived out in a farm for a little while with my mom and dad, and my dad just chopped their heads off. And it's like with the chicken, like a chicken with his head cut off, they just go fluttering all around, wave their wings, their bodies get bruised up, their necks get all dirty from gravel and grit. And that just didn't appeal to me. So I went to the library and I did some research with our chickens. And the neatest way I found to do it is I hang them up, I take them by their feet, hang them up with baling wire upside down on a nail, and I slit their throats. And they bleed out really well that way. It's clean meat, they don't get bruised, and in my mind it seems more peaceful. It's a quieter way to do it. And that's how we did it at our butcher party. Worked out real well. We actually had one college student that she kind of enjoyed the butchering process, so we let her do that part of it, was slitting their throats. But she didn't seem to enjoy it too much, so it was okay. But that really, it's hard to appeal to anybody, but it's one of those things, it's necessary. If you're gonna, I feel like anyone that's going to eat meat needs to get in there, and they need to be part of the killing process. That's because I was a vegetarian for 12 years before I moved to Wyoming. And then when we moved here and our neighbors started bringing us lamb and beef and wild meat that they'd killed, we didn't want to turn it away. And we just felt like it was more important to be able to be part of that process, so we started eating meat, my husband and I, and son. And now we still eat meat, but we raise all of our own meat. Excuse me. Just their wings a little bit, and so, but that's part of it. Their nervous system is shutting down, and they have to do that reflex action. So, but thanks, I got off the subject anyway. So, and then after you do kill them, they hang upside down for just a little bit to bleed out, and then I have scalding water, 126 degrees. And I hold them in that 30 seconds to a minute, just kind of depends. I put a few drops of soap in that water. It helps penetrate the feathers. And then after that, I stick them in cold water to cool them down right away. Then I lay them out, and I probably do three or four at a time, and then I go ahead and pluck them. Joe Salatin has a great way he does his. And there are pluckers that you can buy, but they're more expensive than what I can afford at this point for my operation. And they're little rubber fingers that just take the feathers off. They're really a great thing. But that's how the process is. I kind of just roll my hands along the feathers, pull them off. And then there's some pin feathers that you have to use a knife against your thumb and pull those out. And then they have these like almost hairs, some of them, if you butcher them the wrong time. And so we use a propane torch and just take care of some of those hairs. Then the next thing we do is we cut down and we get the sack where they hold the feed. They use that. They process the feed in a big sack. I don't feed them for the night before I butcher. So that sack's actually empty, and it's a lot easier to clean then, because it goes from that feed sack and into the gizzard. And so anyway, I cut the sack off, I cut their windpipe, and then I go to their back and I cut between their vent and up their belly just a little bit, and then I just scoop out all the innards with my hands. One thing you need to be real careful of is the liver and gallbladder. The gallbladder is a little green oblong thing that you'll find, and you want to make sure you cut that out, because if you goof and if you burst that, it can just make the meat really bitter. And every once in a while it does happen, no matter how careful you are. I just throw the innards away then and get it away from the bird as fast as I can. The gizzard is kind of a cool thing. You can kind of see all the different rocks and gravel that they've eaten. we'll find little pieces of glass and things like that inside the gizzard too. The gizzard, you cut it in half, you open it up and peel out that membrane to get it clean. And then I put them in cold water in a stock tank, basically, if I'm doing a bunch. So their body starts cooling them down. And after I get the guts out and get all done with the chickens and get all that mess cleaned up, then I take them in the house and dress them out a little more. And I make sure that the lungs tend to be inside. You want to scrape those out, get everything out. And then you keep them, you can either put them in cold water. I have a friend that has a beautiful cloth-footed bathtub. She fills it up with ice and cold water for 24 hours after she butchers, and that's where she stores her chickens. She doesn't use her bathtub for anything else either, so it's just kind of a decorative thing. But what I do is I just put them in cold water, or else I will just stick them in the fridge in bags. And I don't freeze them for 24 hours, and I don't cook them for 24 hours, because there's a process of rigor mortis that actually happens and goes through the tissues and everything. And if you freeze them too soon, the meat ends up tough. So you kind of let them process in that 24 hours. Then I bag them up, cut them up, however it is I want to do, and freeze them or cook them. My chickens are a little tougher than a lot of chickens because they are free range, and they run all over the place. And so they've got really, really muscular legs. So it's just kind of how you want to do it. If these chickens that we got, the 100 that we got last year that we had our butchering party, we kept them confined to just a small run. And that was much, it's much better. They were much more tender that way. But a young hen, is real hard to clean too. They aren't, like I said, they're not real meaty. There was the meat. We probably only had 3.5-pound chickens there, so I was a little disappointed with the weight when we butchered. But it seems like everybody enjoyed the meat. That worked out. When we do get the chickens, we were real fortunate. We had two barns on our property, so we could go ahead and utilize those barns for our chickens, and that's still what we're doing. All we had to do was make some nesting boxes and some chicken roosts. And that was it. We were set. The runs, though, are really important. The chicken run, what we do is I bury chicken wire a foot into the ground around my run. Then I have the fences 5 foot at least. And then I cover them just so hawks and eagles can't get in. And raccoons actually can climb. I didn't realize that before, but raccoons like to climb, and they love eggs. And when they get really desperate, they'll actually eat a chicken, too. And so I think raccoons were probably the worst predator I had for a while. Haven't had a raccoon now for about 10 years, so that's been nice. I currently have 42 chickens, one of which is a rooster. And there's good things and bad things about roosters. If you live in town, you probably don't want to have a rooster, or you can't have a rooster because they're noisy. They crow at dawn, they crow at night. They crow all during the day. They don't need to have a reason. They crow a lot. They're great. I enjoy it. They actually are protectors. They go out and they watch the hens, and they watch the sky. If they see a hawk or an eagle, they crow and they let everybody know, and they'll huddle down or chase the hens into the coop. So having a rooster is a great idea if you want to put up with the noise. I've never been able to raise more than one rooster at a time because they fight and they're very territorial. And I've had to get rid of a lot of the roosters I've had because after a year or two, so often they'll get really mean and nasty. And so then they see everything as a predator, including us when we go out to feed them. Next thing you know, you have a rooster running up your back. And they don't last too long. They go to the stew pot then. I don't need any roosters that are quite that aggressive.
They're very dangerous to children.
They are really tough for kids. If you have guests come to your house, you want to watch that. We have a really fantastic rooster right now. He's almost 4 years old, but he's henpecked. You know that expression? He's awful. He has no feathers on his front, and he has no feathers on his tail. The hens, when they walk by him, they're just so fond of him, they pull off a feather and walk off. And he's pretty sad looking. But, you know, he's really great because he doesn't bother kids. He's just a real pacifist. He's just really sweet.
Was he home raised?
No, he was home raised, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My home raised ones have been nice. My packaged ones have been.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay. Excuse me.
Your tennis rackets are excellent.
Tennis rackets, yes. I have used.
Raised, too. They're really very effective. The child can wield them.
That's right.
And the roosters will learn.
That's right. I've used T-post myself.
It's only one blow.
Yeah, one blow, and so they go and it's too hot. Oh, that is, sorry about that, I'm jumping around so much. The third thing I want to mention, the third way that you can butcher is by breaking their necks. A friend of mine goes around and he just grabs their heads and he twists, and their bodies are heavy enough that it breaks their necks. Another way the old pioneer women did it was that they would go out with a broomstick and they'd step on the chicken with the broomstick over their neck and then pull their head off. They bled out that way, but it's pretty gruesome. My friend that does that with breaking the neck, he actually slits their throats afterwards too, so they bleed out. Because that's an important part. You want to get that blood off the meat. Excuse me.
No, one more twist can have them far.
Oh, does it? Okay. I have a hard time twisting it at all that hard, so it does. Okay, well, that's good to know. It's like the broomstick then. If you pull hard enough, it comes off. Okay. The round I've covered. And the cold and freezing problems with water and hot weather. It's kind of interesting because my chickens are free range. They probably go over like 10 acres of the property. They cover a lot. I have no grasshoppers. Yeah, they're wonderful. they're good for grasshoppers. When I got to Torrington and was going for a walk the first morning in the motel, there's so many grasshoppers. I thought, boy, they need chickens here. So they are great with grasshoppers. They don't go into my yard because they also are great with eating any garden produce, digging holes. They're great hole diggers. And so you want to watch that. I do, though, at the end of the season, after I've harvested everything, I like to put them in because they're really good about insect control. And they also love the worms that I've got all around. But it's just been, it's a fun thing. It's been exciting. I had a talk with a friend about a month ago, and I was telling her about this program I was going to go to and get to listen to Joel Seligman, who's been like my hero for several years. I've read all of his books, and it's nice to know that you live on the land and you do that cooperative effort with, you know, the soil and the chickens. And I would tell my friend, I said, you know, we live out in Wyoming, though. We've got 40 acres, no water, except for our well. And so there's not much we can do to make an impact. And last Sunday, I was out in my garden, and I realized, you know, how dark our soil is. I mean, it's just wonderful, the contrast between what we had when we moved there and what we've got now. We had no trees. Well, we've got big trees now that, you know, if we moved away, they probably, their roots are down to the water table. And what was really exciting was I moved the slabs that I use for mulch and between my rows in the garden, and there were two frogs that jumped out. Wow, that is so exciting. And then I went to my greenhouse and I planted my fall crop of kale, and there was this little salamander that came running out. And there are none of those things that existed when we moved to that place 20 years ago. It was just flat, dry prairie. And I realized in our own way, we have made an impact on the soil like Joel did. I feel like our chickens are just as responsible for it as what we were. They're great. And I want to share that with you because that was so exciting that I think my garden soil, I'm as proud of producing that as I am any garden produce that I have. And now I would welcome questions. I know you brought up something about mailing with the chickens.
Yeah, that so friends mailed to Torrington some turkeys, actually, and they arrived Friday, and the post office let them sit there till Monday, and they wrote that. So you better check
call your post office.
Yeah.
Well, they did, but they still let them sit.
Yeah, the post office didn't let them know that they were there. And so, like I said, we're real fortunate with our post office. But that's something you need to educate.
If you're having them shipped in, have them just tell the shipper to make sure they don't come on.
Ship them on Monday or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Ship them right after they hatch. Ours usually come on Friday. Mm-hmm. So they got to ship them as soon as they hatch them. You got to check with your hatchery and see what day it'll come.
Now, one of the things that I did include is kind of a little profit loss sheet that we do with our how we've done this year. This year is probably the last 2 years is the first time we've actually made money with our eggs. And I attribute that to the co-op. Our local co-op sells our eggs. The people that buy our eggs want to make sure that they're fresh, that they're free range, that the chickens have been treated humanely, that they don't get any antibiotics, they don't get chemicals, anything like that. Any feed I buy, I make sure that it's chemical-free with no antibiotics. And so we can charge, I get $375 from the co-op for my eggs. And that's an amazing amount. It really is. And I used to get like $1, $1.50 for my eggs. And so I just broke even by raising chickens. I got good eggs. That was great for me. But this way I actually make a profit. I pay for my groceries now with the eggs that I sell at the co-op. Part of the reason that I can sell them for that price is people are concerned about the food they eat now. But another thing is that I still buy my food from our local ANC feed. They're great. I pay a little more than if I drove out of town to get feed. But if I didn't support our local feed company, they wouldn't be in existence. I make enough from my eggs that I feel comfortable charging the price I do. That's what all the other producers charge too. So it's a cycle. It's like our land that's changed so much because of the chickens and the goats and all the different critters we've had and the care we've given it. The community-supported agriculture happens because places like the co-op come in, and instead of buying from some other mass producer they could, our co-op buys locally as much as they can. And so that is just, it's just been such a boon for us and for other producers. And the co-op buys local meat, and they can't buy the chickens because we aren't USDA inspected and can't do that with our chickens. But, okay, go ahead.
Can you do state inspected Wyoming? See, we're state inspected in Nebraska. We just live across the border. So if you would be able to do a state inspected facility in Wyoming.
There is something available, I think, but I haven't been able to get to that. We have nothing for chickens in Wyoming. I do know that. We can take them down to a facility down in Colorado. Is that what they do, Celeste, for the ones that they sell at the co-op?
Jodar Farms is in Alt, Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Colorado can do it, but we don't have a place in Wyoming. It's kind of like they were talking, a lot of the...
Whether somebody could start a state inspected.
It would be wonderful if we could start that.
I know it's not real hard to do in Nebraska, so we've done it.
Okay.
And I know they have state inspected beef facilities in Wyoming, which they don't have in Nebraska, which is interesting that we can do a state inspected. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because of the large producers. We had so many slaughterhouses years ago. Every state had two or three of them. Now I think there's 13 major slaughterhouses in existence in the United States. I could be wrong in that figure, so don't quote me. But
there is someone in Cheyenne who's looking at
that. Would be great. That would be wonderful. Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
And I know a lot of the farmers markets require you can't sell meat,
right?
But the farmers markets require that it's a USDA inspected slaughterhouse for the ones that I have been to, and that the meat is frozen if you're selling at the farmer's market.
We sell at farmer's markets.
Right, yeah, but it still has to be USDA inspected.
No,
there's a difference between the
You can't cross state lines.
Oh, can you do it state inspected?
So when you're growing something, an animal in Wyoming, or slaughtering it in Wyoming, it only can be sold in Wyoming, but it's not limited to just farmers markets. It can be sold in a grocery store as long as it's in a state inspected plant. Not a custom plant. There's custom plants that are inspected by the state, but not during slaughter. And those can only be sold directly to the consumer.
Right.
But the state-inspected plant where the inspector is on site while the kill and the, is going on, those can be sold at farmers markets, in the grocery store, wherever.
But I don't believe we have one in Wyoming.
We have about 20 of them.
There's one in Hudson.
State-inspected plants for chickens?
Yeah, they're mostly red meat.
No, not for chickens.
Not for chickens.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, red meat, I know.
She was saying other meat.
Yeah.
Clarifying that.
Okay, great, yeah. Excuse me, go ahead.
I was wondering on your cost analysis, how many chickens does that cover?
Oh, that's for my 42 that I have right now.
42. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that you don't have the cost of the chickens in there.
No, I didn't put that in. Okay. Yeah. The chickens were, I think, $239 each. They're both 1 year and 2 years old. Plus, I kept several of the sex links, and so those were freebies.
And over what time period is your business cost analysis?
Pardon?
Is it a month or is it a?
This was over the summer, actually. Yeah, it's a 1 month cost analysis, but it was an average of what I'd done this summer.
So, when you free range them in the wintertime, how much of the food are they actually able to get?
Very little.
Yeah,
very little. I mean, we have so many drifts around our place, you know, with the wind and everything. But they still love getting out, and they dig in the snow. And yeah, we have a heater for their water, but that's all we have to do about free range. And I did want to mention with the water.
Do you have the coop heated at all?
No, I don't have my coop heated. I do have, you know, it's pretty wind tight, but not, you know, how barns are. But in the summertime, I discovered that I was having some deaths with my chickens, and the reason for that was that I needed to put water out because they wouldn't go all the way back to their coop where I have the waterers out. So I just have like water in strategic areas now, and I haven't had any more losses from that, but they were getting dehydrated. And I was interested that Joel only has the one water on his chicken tractor, but
Help add to it, and you
that's
just
right.
Put the straw and stuff in, and it keeps a nice warm pile.
That's actually what I do. Is I have like I'll put straw out, and they just have all that bedding, and it just kind of works that anaerobic bacteria. Even in the coldest part of winter, it does not totally freeze up, and so that's great. And it's also wonderful to add to the garden. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Leaves. Straw sometimes has a tendency to retain moisture versus your other beddings.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep layering leaves in. They give me the big plastic bags, and I just bring truckloads home. And you just keep layering them in, and my litter will get this deep. And I don't clean it out until spring, and it's nice and warm, and it gives them a lot of heat.
Yeah, my first year, you know, the first few years, I cleaned it, you know, every few months. And then now with when you do all that litter, you really only have to clean it once or twice a year. It makes such a difference. And you don't have that horrible smell of ammonia in the wintertime. So, hey, Celeste.
Friend, there was an article I saw, and I just briefly glanced at it a while back. There was a woman in Salt Lake who said she was getting arsenic or lead poisoning, and they figured out it was from the chicken feed. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't.
Mm-hmm. It suddenly occurred to me, I just wondered if anyone heard anything more about the feed and where they figured that out. Because like I say, it was like this one-day article. And
yeah.
Really
no, I could see a free-range chicken getting lead poisoning if you have an old ranch house because of the lead paint around the house. It chips. It actually goes down in the soil. It's not a good idea to plant any crops right next to the house and those old ranch houses, anything over, let's see, 1970 was when we stopped using lead paint. And so it's just something to consider when you have your free-range chickens. We live in a mobile home, and so it's a moot point. It didn't have actually paint on it, so now it does, but it's the newer paint. But yeah, 1970 was when they stopped using lead in our paints, and so it's just something. I'm glad you brought that up, Celeste, about the feed and the lead, and I wasn't aware of that one. But.
And I don't know if it was feed or the free range. Like I say, it was one of those days I kind of saw it.
Were they free ranging in an old mine area? There's a lot of old mines in Utah.
I don't know. It was just this, like I say,
arsenic's in the soil.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions?
I have one.
Oh, okay. David, go ahead.
This one's kind of off the wall. Has anybody considered growing maggots for fun and profit?
Oh, well, you know, that would work great. It really would.
Roadkill or something like that, and kind of grind it up and put it in a 5-gallon bucket. I've heard about this.
Yeah.
And you just have some holes, and when the flies go to pupate, then they're looking for a place, and they drop down, and there they are as a ready-made.
Be a great source of protein. The smell, though, while it's decaying, I'm not sure about that.
I think there's a way to do that by simply putting the things in the bucket and then putting a cover over the top of the thing so it doesn't.
Okay.
That works well with my humidor composting. Is to every time I use the bucket, I'm putting cover over the top and that.
Mm-hmm. It's something we might try. You know, after we butcher chickens, we can do that with the guts as far as that goes. But that's right. And one thing I neglected to say is we have very few flies around our place because the chickens go through our horse manure, and they dig through and they get the fly larvae for the most part. Okay, now you had a question.
With your free range chickens, this is the first year I've ever done chickens. Children surprised me for my birthday with 25 of them and then built me a coop. And to be honest, I've just loved them. But having a problem with eggs everywhere.
Yes.
Even though they have a coop and they have the nest boxes in there, how do you train them to use the boxes?
Well, and that's part of what Joel was talking, that 3-day learning curve for chickens. It's a big one. I would leave them in their coop for 3 days. At least until everybody's, well, it may take longer than 3 days, but I would say 3 days are average learning curve for a chicken. Leave them in the coop so they don't get to go out and run. Then they'll start getting in the nest. Do you have them up?
Well, they're great with, you know, they all go in the coop at night. They know they know just when to go in. They sit in the nest. And they're great that way, but they don't lay in there.
Yes, well, you need to keep them there. Lock them up.
Make sure
it's till they don't let them out until about 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 or 4 o'clock. Let them out. You know, if you want to let them be able to graze and run a little bit, you could do that during this. So you don't have to be quite so harsh and keep them locked in there for all that time.
But,
yeah, and there are some, you might do a little research, like if you've got too much light where the nesting boxes are, they don't like to lay there. So you want to make it a real nice place that they feel comfortable with. So, okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the breed, too.
Tiny cats.
Okay.
I had a neighbor give me some game hens, which are actually fighting birds. And they're great mothers. So if you have cats or anything, they will train your cats not to kill baby chickens because they're mean. But they will make it so it's Easter egg hunt every day. You're looking every day just for those. I have 3 of them, and I'm always hunting for their eggs. But the other breeds, some breeds will go into the house, and other ones have a tendency to.
And it's interesting because each breed is so different. I've got 2 posters here, and it's got the different breeds. And then the colors of eggs. But the Murray McMurray Hatchery book is really cool because it's got like an illustration, old-fashioned kind of illustration on each breed. And it's got personalities, too. And that helps a lot because it's a good point. I've had other fowl I've raised. Like I had guinea hens. You know, there was no way to teach them to go into a nest or anything. They wouldn't even go into the coop. They ended up huddling up on top of the chicken run and freezing to death one winter in one big batch. It was pretty gruesome. And so it's interesting to go ahead and read about those different breeds for whatever you decide you want to do. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm just asking about guineas. We have 5 guineas. Mm-hmm. They were probably born maybe the 1st of June, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And so they're not very old, but we raised them with our baby chicks, and they go in at night with our hens.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I just wondered, I've been told, though, once they do start laying eggs, that their behavior might change.
Okay.
Do you know if that's...
No, I don't, because I just tried the guineas the one time, and then the mass of frozen ones in the snow and ice, I just didn't have the heart to try it again. But I could never get them to go in the coop like I did the chickens.
Mine will go back in the coop, but when it comes time to lay their eggs, they'll be everywhere. And the trick is to fight. They'll all lay in one nest or two nests, and you'll finally find them, and you'll find 20, 30 eggs in a big pile. And what we do is we go through and we mark them all, and then we just know where the nest is, and we go back and look for the new eggs, and then we can collect our eggs, because the hens will go lay in the same nest, too. Yeah.
And you get a hen that's a little bit more reliable to sit on those eggs, right?
If they're fertilized and what. And my guineas will set on them, too. What they say about the guineas is they'll set on them, but as soon as they hatch, if they can't keep up, if the chicks don't keep up, yeah, mom's out of here.
Guineas are pretty cool.
And so like, then you've got to get a hen to raise them, or raise them like you would your bought chicks.
Do people eat the guinea?
Pardon?
They're all dark meat.
I can't hear you.
Do you eat the eggs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can eat any of the...
Your pullet eggs.
Any of the eggs that you raise from fowl. Like turkeys, goose, chickens, ducks, all of those. Pheasants. All of the eggs are quite edible, and they're great.
I've never heard of anybody selling the guinea eggs.
Sometimes you can find them. I've seen pheasant eggs for sale. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Okay.
I have a question for the audience here. I was in New Mexico this spring and was at the Española Research Station. And Del Jimenez, who does a lot of hoop houses, was doing workshops, hands-on workshops, on building small mobile chicken tractors that can basically almost pull, but need at least a little garden tractor to pull. They would handle up to 100 birds, and it was a rather interesting design. And he has offered to come up to Wyoming and put on a workshop, a hands-on workshop on how to build these small mobile chicken tractors or chicken coops. If there's interest, by a show of hands, if anybody is interested, we could go ahead and bring him up and do that. So,
that sounds great, yeah. We're going to start working on his line right away when I get home.
The number of small producers in New Mexico that live on small acreages and have small flocks of birds. So that was the whole reason behind it. So. Sounds like there's interest. We'll bring them up.
That'd be super. That'd be great.
Be through the extension, though?
It would be, sorry?
Through the extension?
Department of Ag, but yeah, okay, we work so closely with extension.
How will we find out?
We'll get a list of the people who are here, and we'll send out an email.
Did we ever?
Okay. Sounds good. I brought a few books that I've. Oh, excuse me, David.
Is there any other questions or comments? Could people come up to the front using the microphone? Because I'm hard hearing. I don't know if anybody else is. Oh. I'm having trouble hearing any of the.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I can hear the answers, but I can't hear the.
Yeah, question. And I could actually repeat the question too. So, did you hear his comment about someone coming? That. Okay, great.
I have a question.
Okay.
Concerned about salmonella. What's the reason? Scare? How do you deal with that?
I don't. I have not had any problems with pests, any sort of pest illnesses or anything with my chickens. They're free range. But, you know, salmonella, it's there. You know, it goes actually into the chicken's liver and it's stored. I don't know I think part of the reason for the salmonella is that they feed these chickens so many antibiotics, they get super strains, and those bugs survive. And did you hear the question? I'm sorry, it's about the salmonella.
And
it's just not a problem that we've had. I mean, we use our eggs raw for making mayonnaise, things like that. So, but it's just something to be cautious of. Pardon?
I think you'll see it more
yeah.
in
confinement. That's it. I mean, most produce, most of the chickens that they raise for mass egg production, they never see the light of day. They don't have any space. They don't have roosts. They just walk around on this little 1 square foot of floor space they've got. And that just breeds all kinds of problems. You know, that's why they give them antibiotics, because they're just... they're right there, they're eating where they poop and everything like that. It's pretty unclean. I brought,
we sell eggs too, and actually we've seen an increase in people wanting our eggs because of that.
Our local co-op is sold out of eggs
right.
because of that too. Yeah. I did bring a few books. This is a great one, the Complete Herbal Handbook for Farm Animals. And it's got a nice part in chickens. And if you want to raise your chickens organically, not buy this sort of prepared feed from the store, they've got some great combinations of herbs that you can use for high calcium, protein, things like that, and different grains. This is a book I use all the time. This is another one that's just healthy chicken
that's
book.
On the back of this sheet?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is another one, the healthy chicken book. Gail Damaro's written several books. But this is a nice one. It's just about chicken diseases. Before I had my chickens free range, 1 year I got mites, leg mites, and it was just a bother. And I finally had to resort to chemicals to get rid of those. Now that I've got free range chickens, I've had no problems with the mites, because the chickens go out and they have dust baths. They get rid of anything that's there. And we haven't had mites or lice. But this is a great one. This is the one that answered my problem with the, you know, what chemical to use, the least toxic one. This is a great book for if you're in an urban area and you just have a backyard, and it's got lots of references. It's a fun book to read for just the small producer. And this is a literary chicken book. It is so cool. You know, because chickens have been around for so many thousands and thousands of years, and we've got so many sayings like the hen pecked, pecking order. Boy, you'll learn about pecking order with chickens. And so this is a fun book to read just for, I don't know, pastime. So, and this is a magazine I get, Countryside. It's pretty cool. It's just about those small local people that raise chickens, beef, you know, whatever. And they write in letters and they have all kinds of ideas. It's kind of a fun magazine to get, well worth it. And are there any questions? I've got like 4 more minutes. No, I have not been. It's one of those things I have not asked about. I mean, when I did ask about it, it's just like our feed store didn't know.
What was the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is whether I've been able to get the non-GMO feed for my chickens. And I haven't. Not in Laramie. I haven't been able. I don't advertise them as organically grown, because I just advertise them as free range, no limits. And they are chemical-free, but, I don't know about the corn and the wheat.
Well, is there any way to avoid using corn?
Oh,
that's
something that's kind of a political thing to talk about, because even a lot of the organic fields of corn have that strain just because bees carry it and things like that. But you can go down, like, to Fort Collins and get organic corn.
No,
so,
but I just wondered if there's a grain that you can substitute.
Oh, there's lots of grains. Corn's not that great. It's actually so fatty that the chickens get pretty fat on it. So you're better with millet, buckwheat. They love buckwheat. Wheat, oats, things like that. And you had a question.
Corn is
corn isn't going to be as much of a problem as soybeans.
Corn is much of a problem as soybeans,
that he's doing the roasted
yes.
soybeans. Soybeans are huge, hard to get rid of. It's hard to get a non-GMO source
yes.
soybean.
She's bringing up the non-GMO soybeans. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that's very hard to avoid any of them. I don't give any soybeans to my chickens or soybean oil. I've avoided that because...
How do you get around getting enough protein for them?
How do I get enough protein? Oh, they take care of it. They dig up my worms around the garden.
Grasshoppers.
In the wintertime?
In the wintertime, it would be different. Right?
Well, you know, it's kind of amazing in that mulch that I have. There's a lot of living things. They dig through there. And I actually saw a salamander one time out in the hen coop. He didn't last real long, but... And if there's any mice that actually make it out to the hen coop, they'll eat down there. Chickens don't have too much of a problem with protein if they have the chance to free range a little bit. And then the feed that I do give them is pretty high in protein. It's 16% for the lay mix. So, okay.
In the winter, you can also give them flakes of alfalfa.
Yeah, alfalfa flakes are great.
And especially after this year, there's lots of baled up grasshoppers in there for the winter.
Very good. I hadn't thought about that. So
oh, yeah.
It's going to increase the protein content in your hay and alfalfa.
So I got a couple of bales I'm waiting for.
Yeah. Just a reference for people who are interested in making their own feed for their animals, the National Resource Council NRC has nutrition handbooks for all the species.
Oh.
So they have one for poultry.
Okay.
And I don't know how much it costs, but you can Google it, and I'm sure Amazon has it.
Now, did you, everybody hear that about the... Now, what group is it?
NRC, the National Resource Council.
NRC has handbooks that you can ask for chickens or any other animal if you want to email that or, I mean, Google that or write to them. Okay.
One thing you might mention, if you do get baby chickens, they're not de-baked with whatever else, if you get any pecking, you can change your light from the white to the red.
Yeah, that's a good idea. She's talking about the pecking with chickens. If that happens with your young chicks, I haven't had a problem because mine always have so much space, but you can use a red lamp, and the red, for some reason, they don't peck at each other. And so it works out really well. I'm glad you brought that up. I had it in my notes, and I've just been hopping all around with this. So, okay, one more question.
I had a question concerning back to the butchering.
Back to the butchering.
I've butchered chickens before. It's not anything anybody, you know, really likes to do. But I was always concerned about outside temperature as well as the temperature, like, of your ice water bath.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to keep track of that? I mean, is there a better temperature outside? I know it can't be too cold, but then it can't be very warm also. And the time from the kill to the getting them in the ice water, what is your time frame?
Okay. She's asking about the time frame when we butcher for the temperature getting it into the ice water. So the heat doesn't start to decay the meat. My chickens usually within the ice water within 15 minutes. My well water is so cold. It's really very, very cold year round. And so I fill that trough several times during the process of butchering so it stays cold. But that's one reason after I blanch the chicken, why I put it into cold water, because that starts to cool down the body. Once you get them gutted, they start cooling further. And then if you get them within 15, 20 minutes, they're going to be fine.
So okay.
But this is just... I think we're done. Excuse me.
Real quick. Everyone's just talking about looking. In my family, I hate chickens. Personally.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife skins them.
Yes.
I don't have to pluck.
Oh, and that works great. Skinning a chicken is a great alternative to plucking.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So please do come get a McMurray catalog and a handout if you want. And thanks for coming.